gradually increasing wind warned of more changes to come. By 2 o'clock the next morning, I was tying a third reef in the mainsail and hoisting the storm jib from a plunging deck. The disturbed sea whipped up white caps that glowed ghost-like in the beam of my flashlight. I knew immediately when we entered the Agulhas Current because the waves stretched out in length and doubled in height. The remainder of the night we set a fast stroke swimming down the coast, making a combined 8 knots over bottom with the current's help. At dawn, a round of morning star sights indicated I was well off the wild coast, somewhere along the Republic of Transkei. From late morning, an overcast sky lingered and made the next day's positions all guesswork. In a compromise between John Soden's advice to stay further offshore and the local experts who said to stay close to shore and run port to port, I steered a compromise route of about 20 to 30 miles offshore. Here I could catch a ride on the axis of the current and safely rest without risk of running ashore in my sleep, yet be close enough, in theory, to get into harbor within a half day if I felt the need. By afternoon, I was becalmed with the barometer pointing ominously to an approaching low. Rows of sullen black clouds swept towards me in wind-torn shreds from the southwest that seemed to scrape the masthead as they passed. The gale arrived all at once in a furious blast of wind and spray. We were deep-reefed, and at first I was able to keep Adam mostly on her feet, but she began to complain as we fell off the increasingly slab-sided waves. As conditions worsened, I turned and ran downwind under storm jib alone. The chaotic waves flung their breaking tops aboard from all sides. It was painful to think that a mere 30 feet below the water's surface was perfectly calm, and I found myself wishing I were commanding a submarine rather than a small sailboat. My periscope-like view out through the plastic dodger windows showed decks nearly awash, being swept stem to stern with foaming water. Each wire and line of the rigging moaned in the howling wind as I climbed onto the cabin top to secure the mainsail tighter to the boom. Bent over the boom, I looked up to see waves breaking above as we dropped into the troughs, giving me the feeling I was standing on the surface of the sea itself. Our speed was too great for the sea conditions, and I considered dropping the jib to run under bare poles. Too late. While dropping headlong down one flat-sided wave, the wind vane jerked so hard on the tiller that it snapped in two. The boat broached in a sideways slide to the seas. At the same moment, the lee spreader dipped into the sea, and a sharp snap signaled a shroud had broken at its lower swaged fitting. Adam rolled with beam broadside to the pounding seas. The tiller stub slammed back and forth as I worked quickly with wrenches to bolt on an emergency tiller. Since I had added extra masthead rigging in Florida, the mast thankfully stayed intact, while I attached bulldog clamps and lashings to hold the broken wire in place. I also felt reassured that I had prepared for heavy weather by strengthening bulkheads and locker seals and reduced the volume of the cockpit footwell by installing storm shutters. At midnight, the faint glow of a lighthouse confirmed my estimated position, and I hove to on the offshore tack for the remainder of the night. The motion was better, with the boat drifting slowly, and had the added benefit that I was not losing as many precious miles to windward. I even managed a few moments of near sleep that night as the gale died out. By morning, a gray mountain range revealed itself some 5 miles away. All day I worked at coaxing and urging Adam to gain sea room against a current pulling me towards the uninhabited shore. Under full sail and light wind, we struggled against the different leftover wave trains that intermingled and engulfed each other in a confused pattern, causing Adam to pitch, yaw, and roll at the same moment. Again and again, waves broke over the bow and stern at the same time, slowing our slight forward motion until steerage way was lost. Then she rolled, dragging her boom in the sea, slowly building up speed to the next double wave set. As the feeble breeze strengthened, it shifted around the compass. The same sea-building power of the wind also lessened the waves as it shifted against them. Vigilant sail trimming eventually allowed me to make progress to a safer distance offshore. Just after midnight, as I close reached at 3 knots, I set the alarm clock for 1 hour and let the accumulated fatigue and sense of security lull me into a deep sleep. I awoke 5 hours later at dawn, feeling refreshed and surprised at my carelessness. It was hard to shake that shoreside habit of sleeping through the night. If an ill wind shift and change of current had caught me during those hours of sleep, I'd have become bones for the jackals on the wild coast. As luck had it, I was instead carried far offshore during the night. My next two sun sights put me an unexpected 50 miles from land.